Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What is up, bros? I'm Jonathan.
Nah, I'm Caleb.
And we're a couple of bros on a mission to give you guys the most detailed movie reviews out there with as little bias as possible. Welcome to the All Bros. This week on the podcast, since we really don't have a lot to talk about with weekly watches, Caleb actually came up with a great idea for a fill-in for that.
Yeah, we'll be trying something new.
Yeah. So, Caleb, you want to, like, really quickly just talk about that?
Okay, yeah. So, I saw someone on Instagram play this game that I thought we would be decent at. And so, it's called Connect the Stars. It was created by these two people, Eric By and Amanda Hum. And all it does is it chooses two random actors, and you have to find the a route and how those actors connect to each other. So it's kind of like that 6 degrees to Kevin Spacey, or not Kevin Spacey, to Kevin Bacon. Wrong Kevin.
Yeah, definitely, yeah, definitely wrong Kevin.
Yeah, where it's like every actor alive somehow connects to like Kevin Bacon, and you can do that within like 6 shots. So it's. It gives you a celebrity. You pick a movie that celebrity's in, and then like you can choose a different actor from that movie, and then you have to find the common thread. So, like for example, if you wanted to do it, like freaking play this on easy mode, and you did like Matt Damon and like George Clooney, you could just say Ocean's 11. Ocean's 11 is the movie that connects those two actors together.
Yeah,
yeah, and to give us a bit of a challenge, I say we just let it do it for us. Like
I'm cool.
So okay. Let's do that. So the first actor, Jackie Chan.
Okay.
The second one, Jamie Foxx.
Ooh, okay.
Ooh. So you can just name a movie that either actor's been in, and it'll connect.
All right, Rush Hour.
Rush Hour?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then who, like, I'm assuming you're going to try and connect him to Chris Tucker?
I
guess. Or is there a different actor in there that...
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm trying to think, like, has Cameron Diaz been in a movie with Jackie Chan?
Has she? I don't know if she has.
Yeah.
It's like sad. The only like movies that are like coming to mind with Jackie Chan in it are the Rush Hour films and the Karate Kid remake. It's literally all that's coming to my mind right now.
Yeah. But okay, so can we connect Will Smith to Jamie Foxx? I'm trying to think because Will Smith might be a good one, because if we can do the Karate Kid and then do what's his name?
Jaden Smith?
Jane Smith, and then he was in is it 47? No, what's that movie that he was in with Will? Oh, Pursuit of Happiness. I guess you could do that.
Oh, okay. Love that movie.
Yes. And then we can bring in Will Smith. Nah. Oh, God. This is tough, dude.
Yeah, seriously. What has Jamie Foxx worked with Will Smith or like in being, been involved with him?
Shit, this is a tough one. Okay, who has Jamie Foxx worked with?
I'm thinking of the guys in the Horrible Bosses films. So like Jason Sudeikis, Jason Bateman, and Charlie Day. But I don't know if those three connect to Will Smith.
Okay. All right. Horrible Bosses. Oh, okay. I think I got it. Jason Bateman, who was in Hancock.
Oh, yeah. Nice, bro. Nice.
Yeah, freaking took us a second and a half.
That was good, dude. That was a good. That was a good final call. I love it.
Yeah, I had to see the faces, dude, because I was like I knew, like obviously I know the name and everything, but it's just seeing the faces. Damn, that was good.
Yeah, that was really good.
We'll try another one.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's see. All right, round two. Yeah. We got Dustin. Oh shit.
Oh man, I only know him for like Meet the Fockers.
And Brad Pitt.
God. Okay.
Dustin Hoffman. Okay. What has Dustin Hoffman been in?
I swear. What was it? A movie with Tom Hanks. Was it called Rain Man?
Rain Man?
Yeah.
Oh, that was Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. My bad.
Okay. So let's pull Tom Cruise out of there. So can we connect Tom Cruise to Brad Pitt?
I'm sure there's a way.
I am drawn. Tom Cruise has acted with everyone, I feel.
He's definitely been around when it comes to co-stars.
Yeah. Okay. Has he done anything? Like, I know Tom Cruise has. Has Brad Pitt done anything with, like, Robert Downey or Jack Black or Ben Stiller?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
Huh.
Like the only like actor that's like coming to mind that like has worked with oh my God, I just forgot his name. Dustin Hoffman, who is
Tom Cruise?
No, the other one.
Oh, Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, thank you. Wow. Leonardo DiCaprio, but he's not here. Who else?
Wait, what movie did Dustin Hoffman and Leo do?
Oh, no, sorry. I was thinking of Leo and Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
What?
Oh, you're Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Okay. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Okay. So that gives us Leo to work with and Margot Robbie and anyone else that we can think of that was in that movie.
Yeah. Who else is... I'm trying to think of like other like stars that were in Mission Impossible. Top Gun Maverick that like have maybe worked with any of these other people. Oh, what is his name?
Who are you thinking of?
I cannot remember his name. Damn it, because he was in Tag as well. He's like one of the main guys.
Okay. Who was in that? That was Ed Helms.
It wasn't him.
There, Jeremy Renner.
No.
Are you talking about the guy that was in New Girl?
I think so.
Oh, he was in Spider-Man.
Oh no, not him.
Oh, okay. You were thinking of oh shit. This is hard because it feels like a test, yeah. And I'm horrible at tests.
Dude, same. I don't know how the hell I made it through school. Yeah, dude, I had to bank on just assignments being worth enough to pass. What is his name? No.
You're talking about the guy that played the coach in Spider-Man? The guy that always put him in detention?
No, not him. Do you remember the Mean Girls musical that came out last year?
Yeah.
Okay, do you remember the gym teacher that taught sex ed? I just can't. can't remember his name.
That was Tina Fey was. I know she was in that.
Dude, when I find out his name, I'm gonna kick myself in the ass.
I don't know. Is there a way to like? Can we? Okay, I like Brad Pitt's worked with damn near every female actress in the goddamn world. Like,
at Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
True.
Has he worked with like Cameron Diaz before, or like in one that you could think of? Because I'm thinking like if we tie Night and Day.
Oh yeah. Let's see.
Okay, I'm trying to think of like big names. I know he's worked with like George Clooney.
Yeah.
Which is like, and then Matt Damon has been another like big one. We could technically get.
Trying to think who his wife was in World War Z.
Oh, let's see. Damn, that sucks.
Son of a bitch.
I don't want to use a hint. I thought the poster would give us a little cheat sheet because it's done that a couple times. Try to think. What's Cameron Diaz been in? I remember she's from The Mask. So we got. I mean, there's Jim Carrey right there. Charlie's Angels, so that gives us Lucy Liu and Drew Barrymore.
Going back to Jamie Foxx, none of these people are. He's not. He hasn't worked with him, right? Because since she was in Annie, Jamie Foxx was in that as well.
Okay, I mean, so can you connect? Can you connect Jamie Foxx to
Brad Pitt?
To Brad Pitt?
I'm trying to think. They've had to have been in a movie together, right?
You would think.
Brad Pitt wasn't in Django Unchained, right? I don't think so.
No. Django was Christoph Waltz. Oh, shit. Christoph Waltz. from Django. What do you mean? Django Unchained. And then we got Christoph Waltz, if I can spell. And then they were in Inglourious Basterds together.
Oh, yeah.
Boom.
Bam.
That was a bit of a walk.
Yeah, that was. But hey, we did it.
Yeah, there has to be something else. Like, there has to be something else that Tom Cruise and freaking Brad Pitt have been in.
Okay, I'm looking up what that guy's name was really quickly. I was thinking of that was in Top Gun Maverick and Tag.
Oh, my gosh. We could have connected Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt in Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, son of a bitch.
I've never seen that movie.
John Hamm. That's who I was thinking of.
Oh, okay. I wonder if there's like a Dustin Hoffman, Brad Pitt movie. Oh my God, there is one.
What?
Sleep.
I don't think I've heard of that.
Yeah, let's see if that one. Oh my gosh. Yep. There.
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. Yeah, that directly ties to.
I mean, hey, it took us a while, but we did it. We did it.
No shit. I mean, not bad, though.
No, not bad at all.
What do you say? One more?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Ryan Gosling and okay. Jonah Hill.
Ooh, okay. Ooh, that sounds like a good one.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. Okay, I got one. Oh, shit. What was that one? Easy A, the one with Emma Stone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then La La Land?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, La La Land. Then Emma Stone. And she was in Easy A, which Jonah Hill was in. Wasn't he?
Oh, no. But he was in, they were both in Superbad.
Oh, that might be the one I'm thinking of. Ah, there we go.
yeah.
Sweet. That one was pretty good. We're on it. We are on it. This is a fun game.
This is, yeah. No, I love this idea, doing this if we don't have anything for weekly watch. I love it.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyway, thank you to the people that created this.
Yeah, this is a freaking blast.
I'll be sure to credit them in the episode description, especially whenever we use it.
No. Hell yeah. Well, so since we did that, which is our replacement segment for Weekly Watch, like I said, when me and Caleb don't have anything to talk about with that, now we will be covering our headliner of the episode, which will be our breakdown, finally, of Nosferatu.
Hell yes.
So what do you say we get into it, Caleb?
I say let's do it.
Need motivation? Angry Dad Podcast. Trying to jumpstart your life? Angry Dad Podcast. You want help getting off the couch? Angry Dad Podcast. You need a verbal kick in the ass? Angry Dad Podcast. You want to hear from somebody who's been through it all? Angry Dad Podcast. I am here for you. You can find me on all podcast platforms.
All right, so getting down to the headliner of the evening. Caleb, do you want to let people know how we break down movies on this podcast?
I would love to. If you are new to our breakdown system, we have split movies into 8 different categories that we individually score to come to a final All Bros letter grade. The 8 categories that we score are story, writing, acting, character development, effects, music, costumes, and then we give our own personal score at the very end. All of those numbers get magically added up and spit through our algorithm and give us a letter grade to compare this movie to others of a similar grade. Was this horror enough to change character development to logic?
I don't know. What do you think?
I'm personally saying no, because it wasn't quite horror enough, but spoiler alert, it's going to take a bit of a dip because character growth was virtually non-existent.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So, okay. We'll leave character development as it is.
Okay.
But yeah. So if you have not seen Nosferatu, you're probably fine.
Well, okay. You know what? If you loved this movie, that's great. Like, I love that for you. Me and Caleb did not hate this movie. Like, I promise you, we did not. I will say, though, before, you know, I read the synopsis, Caleb, have you heard what the director of this movie said when it came to us millennials?
Oh, no. No?
No, it's good. No, it's a good thing. He thanked Steven Hillenburg and the team of SpongeBob SquarePants for introducing millennials to the character of Nosferatu in that one episode, the hash-slinging slasher. Because, you know, you have Nosferatu turning the lights on and off. Because he says, I don't think this movie would have done as well as it did if it weren't for those millennials showing up just to actually see who Nosferatu is.
Oh, my hell. I completely forgot about that episode, but I know what one you're talking about. That's hilarious.
Right? Oh, man.
That's fantastic.
Right? Yeah. Like, I love that. That's awesome. All right. Well, so like Caleb said, if you haven't seen Nosferatu, you're okay. Like I said, we didn't hate it. We enjoyed it. But if you do still plan on seeing it, I'm about to spoil the entire plot for you. So you have been warned.
Yeah. And our favorite segment that we like to call Reading with Rose.
Yeah. All right. In the early 1800s, a young girl named Ellen pleads for a supernatural being to ease her loneliness. Her cries awaken a mysterious creature who makes her pledge herself to him eternally and seduces her. In 1838, Ellen has married Thomas Hutter, and the couple live in the German town of Wisburg. Thomas accepts a lucrative commission from his employer, Ernock, to sell the decrepit Grunewald? I think it's Grunewald, manor to the reclusive Count Orlok. Ellen, disturbed by a pleasurable dream of marrying death, begs Thomas to stay to no avail. He leaves her in the care of his wealthy friend Friedrich Harding and his wife Anna, along with their two young daughters, Clara and Louise. Arriving at the Carpathians in the Transylvania, Thomas is surrounded by the local peasantry and seemingly shunned for associating with Orlok. He manages to secure a night at the inn by paying twice the rate and is warned by an old woman not to visit Orlok. That night, he witnesses a group of Roma exhuming and impaling an alleged vampire's corpse with a stake, making the corpse expel blood. The following morning, he finds the hamlet deserted and his horse gone. He continues on foot until an unmanned carriage carries him to Orlok's castle. Upon their meeting, the strange and menacing Orlok forces Thomas to complete the property sale. Orlok demonstrates preternatural abilities that unsettle Thomas. When he accidentally cuts himself during dinner, he blacks out and awakens to find a bite mark on his chest. The following night, Orlok demands Thomas's locket containing a lock of Ellen's hair and does not give it back. He then coerces Thomas into signing a document written in occult script, which Orlok implies is the contract for selling the manor. Thomas, becoming increasingly sick and fearful, demands to leave, but Orlok rebuffs him and demands he remain and recover before departing. After awakening to find yet more bite marks on his chest, Thomas attempts to escape the castle and instead ends up in a crypt where he finds the Count asleep in a coffin, his body naked and decayed. Yeah, we're going to get to that with costumes, because we got a little story. Got a fun behind the scenes story with that. He attacks him with a pickaxe, but Orlok awakens and pursues Thomas. Thomas escapes Orlok and his wolves by falling into a river beneath the castle, from which he is recovered and cared for by Eastern Orthodox nuns at a nearby church. They explain that Orlok was a Solomonar, who became a vampire after making a pact with the devil himself. Meanwhile, Orlok sets sail for Wisburg inside his coffin on a ship with plague-carrying rats, killing the crew during the voyage. Dr. Wilhelm Sievers? I think that's how they said it?
Yeah.
Dr. Wilhelm Sievers, unable to treat Ellen's frequent sleepwalking and seizures, consults with his former mentor, Albin Eberhard von Franz, a Swiss scientist ostracized for his occult beliefs. Von Franz believes Ellen is under the spell of a demonic, plague-bearing vampire called the Nosferatu. Nock is institutionalized after killing and eating sheep raw. Sievers and von Franz search Nock's office, believing he serves the Nosferatu, who they discover is Orlok. Thomas returns to Wisburg as Orlok's plague ravages the populace. Nock escapes, killing a porter, and escorts Orlok to Grunewald Manor. Orlok appears to Ellen and confesses that, while he is incapable of love, her pledge has intertwined their destinies and made his desire to possess her insatiable. The document he tricked Thomas into signing is revealed to void the Hutter's marriage. Knowing that his bond with Ellen cannot be sustained by force, Orlok says that she must willingly submit to him within 3 nights, else he will kill Thomas and allow the plague to consume Wisburg. Ellen later has troubled sex with Thomas after confessing her past with Orlok. Orlok retaliates by killing Anna and her children. Yeah, that scene was fucked up. Damn.
Bro. Like, I was not sure that the movie was going to go that far.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, when he walks into the room and you see Orlok just sucking the blood out of the last daughter, my mouth dropped.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god,
dude. I was just like, oh, okay. Like, yes, I figured like that he was going to go after the daughters. I thought that it was going to be like he busts in the room, finds them dead, and then that was that. I didn't expect him to be like. He like snapped one of their necks, didn't he?
It kind of did look like that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But he was just like holding it, and then he just drops them, and I'm like, "What was that?"
Also, freaking, they definitely wanted to make sure that you heard the gulping when he was drinking the blood. I was like, okay, this is kind of making me feel a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, this is making me sick in my stomach, dude. I was eating when I was watching this. I'm like,
oh shit, dude.
Like, I couldn't finish my meal. Sorry, man. Like, I was just like, no, this is too much.
I'm good.
Dude, like, I start. So this is, this is what's messed up. I started the movie, and Brielle came out to, like, she was making dinner, like, after it was, like, super late. So she came out when she was done, brought me a plate, and I started eating. And it was that scene, like, I started eating at that scene where those freaking villagers, unbury a vampire and stab it, and it's just, and I was like,
oh yeah,
I was like, oh god,
oh man, dude, freaking, that reminds me, just really quickly, it reminds me, when Saw 4 came out, me and my parents made the horrible decision of eating at the beginning of that movie. I think we were eating spaghetti.
Oh no.
Eating at the beginning of that movie when they're doing the autopsy of John Kramer. That Bro. Was yeah, that was not a good idea on our part.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Okay.
Yeah. No, right, thank so, you.
All right. Driven mad with grief, Friedrich dies from the plague while violating his wife's corpse.
Gross.
I'll definitely get into with the writing. I got some things to say about some of the dialogue that happens in this movie.
Dude, for real.
Von Franz's research suggests that the Nosferatu can be destroyed by a fair maiden's willing sacrifice. Knowing only she can stop the plague, Ellen conspires with Von Franz to keep Thomas away. Excuse me. Thomas, Von Franz, and Sievers go to Grunewald Manor, where they accidentally kill Nock after finding him sleeping in Orlok's coffin. Realizing Von Franz's deception, Thomas rushes back to save Ellen as Von Franz destroys the vault. Ellen summons Orlok to her bedroom and repledges herself to him, allowing him to feed on her until sunrise, when the sunlight kills him. Thomas returns and holds Ellen's hand as she dies, while Von Franz confirms that her sacrifice has freed them from the plague of Nosferatu. The end.
The end. I've heard multiple people explain this movie. The best explanation I've heard is that this movie is just so unnecessarily horny.
Oh, really? That's fair. Okay, yeah, like how you agreed and I brought up with the with the gulping sound that you get every single time that Orlok freaking is drinking someone's blood. I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, he's enjoying this.
Yeah. Too much. Disgusting. But the story here, dude, was, I mean, this is tough because it was very, very dense. Like, I feel the yes. movie itself was. But it followed this, like, the story itself was good. Like, I would say,
yeah.
it wasn't too much in, like, trying to get into the lore of vampires or anything. It was just showing off the creepiness and, like, kind of the beginning and the end of the whole Nosferatu thing.
Yeah.
Like, and it paced itself fairly well. The only thing I felt went on a little long is when they were trying to deal with, what's her face? Emma or Ella?
Ellen. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When she was having her freaking freak outs at night.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can agree with that.
Yeah. Other than that, pretty good. If you followed the story well.
You did. I feel that this movie does a pretty good job at building up tension as well, because I feel that scene when the husband's name? Thomas. When he first gets to Orlok's castle and just how uncomfortable he feels. And throughout the whole stay, he's completely uncomfortable, and how he keeps calling him sir, but then what does he tell him to call him? Is it master or lord?
Lord. Yeah.
That whole scene, I felt so uncomfortable, but in the best way possible, because it was so good at setting up the tension.
Dude, it did so well. And you could see this has everything to say about Nicholas Hoult as an actor too, which we will be getting into, but it's just the horror on his face as all this supernatural shit was happening around him. like the way that he's sitting at the table and he's like, oh no, I'm good. And he's like sitting at the table, he's at the end, and then suddenly he's behind him and he's like, here. And I'm like, ah,
dude, straight up, like, seriously. Yeah, the way that they set up the whole Nosferatu tale and oh my god, I just said his name.
Thomas.
Nosferatu, but his actual name, Orlok. God, how do I keep forgetting that name? Just like seeing where, you know, like where he's like, you know, like first like talked about between Thomas and his boss. I'm sorry, I'm so bad with names with this movie.
Dude, this movie, like I said, was very dense on the names.
Yeah. Like when they first what was his name? Nock, Ernock. When he's talking to his boss, Ernock, like, oh, you know, like Orlok wants to buy this manor in our town, but he wants you to come to his property and have the papers signed there instead of him signing them here. And like already you're just like, okay, that's a little creepy. Like, okay. Yeah. So I feel like they do a really good job at like introducing the character of Orlok and just how it just builds from there. And just, yeah, like I said, this movie is so good at setting up tension. What we see, what was the main character girl's name?
Ellen.
Ellen, thank you. Like the way that what we see her go through, like, is like insane. And I'll get to this with like writing, but what she says about like death and like how she, like what she sees in her vision, I'm just like, shit. And there's one line that I'm going to try to, and I'll bring it up in writing, that I was just like, god damn, like, shit. She's not wrong. But yeah, just watching her story, what happens to her just because she calls to this demon, what her husband has to go through, what Friedrich and Emma have to go through, their daughters, just like, yeah, like it's yeah, you know, like it, like Caleb brought up earlier, it's very unnecessarily horny. throughout it definitely didn't need these loud gulps when Orlok was drinking the blood, but when, yeah. I
or feel the freaking like, dude, like the opening too, when she's like laying in bed and then she starts like moaning, I'm just like, I'm gonna turn this down a little bit. I'm outside in a shop and the damn thing echoes, so I'm just like, oh god, people are gonna think I'm watching porn in here.
Dude, did you have to turn it down for that one scene when freaking Thomas starts having sex with
yep,
her?
I sure did.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna bring that scene up with writing, because like the shit that she starts screaming, I'm just like, oh my god.
Oh yeah, but like, no, this is a bit much.
a little bit. But no, overall the story, like the director said, you know, he thanks Hillenburg and the SpongeBob team for introducing, especially our generation, to the character of Nosferatu. And, you know, considering that I didn't know literally anything about Nosferatu until this movie, except for him and SpongeBob. So how they portrayed his story in here, the way it was told, like, I liked it. I thought they did a good job from start to finish.
Yeah, it feels like a very classic vampire tale.
It does. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, which, I mean, I've read Dracula before and other like vampire based books, like not freaking Twilight or some shit, like real vampires.
What? Those aren't real vampires? What?
I know, that's such an odd statement to say.
Why?
Yeah, it's such an odd statement, but yeah, I felt like the flow was good. It wasn't too boring. I mean, it definitely got there at some points, but it was an odd one and kind of,
yeah,
fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think with story, I'm probably sitting 82.
I think I'm just going to be just a couple points ahead of you at an 84.
Totally fair. Writing, on the other hand, Very dense.
So,
but
yes,
kind of really good.
Yeah, because there is a part where Ellen, right?
Yeah,
is
it Ellen.
No, Ellen. Okay.
Hold on.
Where she
cheat. Yeah, Ellen.
Thank you. Where she's talking to Thomas about her she's not talking to Thomas about it. I think she's talking to the doctor. Yeah. I think it's the doctor, or maybe it's Willem Dafoe's character. But she literally says, she says something like, does evil live in you or does it just overtake you or something like that? Like I'm butchering the line. I know I am. But like I'm trying to imply like the gist that she was getting off of on it. So like she was kind of like just saying like, is evil like born inside of us or do we bring that evil into us? Like, or is that evil like given to us? And that line, I'm just like, fuck, that's some like dense, deep shit right there.
Yeah. I just looked it up. It is, does evil come from within us or from beyond?
Thank you. Yes. That line. Favorite line in the movie because so many levels. Like, incredibly written line. Because it really makes you think.
Yeah. I'm looking through the quotes on IMDb. There's a lot on here. Like there's a the conversation between Ellen and Orlok where it went freaking hard, dude. Where she says you are a deceiver and he says you deceive yourself. It's like I was but an innocent child and you thought that I would not return. Like, and it's like you cannot love. I cannot be sated without you. Then Orlok says, remember how once we were a moment, remember? And Ellen's like, I abhor you. And he says, you are false. Yeah, it's just,
wow.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Freaking, Willem Dafoe was given some damn good dialogue,
dude.
This, his dialogue at this easily on the same level as Green Goblin.
Yeah. Straight up. I don't know about you, but I think I liked his performance here better than his performance in what was that movie with Emma Stone that he was in?
Pretty Girl? Not Pretty
was
Girl.
It Pretty Girl?
Poor Things. What the hell?
That's what it was.
That was not the right movie.
Oh, that was great. But yeah, like I think I enjoyed his performance here more than in that one. Smaller role, but like he made up for it for how incredible not only his performance was, but his dialogue. But do they mention in the quotes what Ellen screams at Thomas when he's having sex with her? Like by chance?
I have not come across that one.
Okay. I can't remember. She's literally just like, please me more than he ever has or some shit like that. I'm just like, oh, okay, all right. We're going to turn this down a little bit because my mother is in the next room.
I'm going through some of like these quotes like from Willem Dafoe's character. It's just, if we are to tame darkness, we must first face that it exists. Like after everyone's trying to deny like everything, like his dialogue was so freaking sick.
It was.
Like I love this one that I just saw where he says, "I have seen things in this world that would make Isaac Newton crawl back into his mother's womb. We are not so enlightened as we are blinded by the gaseous light of science. I have wrestled with the devil as Jacob wrestled the angel in Peniel. And I tell you that if we are to tame darkness, we must first face that it exists." Like that, just a hardcore, dude.
Yeah, dude, seriously.
And his delivery, dude, was sick. Like I loved every freaking second of this. Like I'm not quite in the 90s, but I'm damn close. Like I'm jumping up to like 88 It was so good.
So I'm going to match you with that, but I just found, yeah, here it is. So I found the quote. So yeah, like I said, I'm matching Caleb, like absolutely 88. The writing is that good. But here is the quote in its entirety. So Ellen is kneeling, begging and clinging to Thomas's knee. Suddenly she looks at him lavishly. You could never please me as he could. Thomas becomes enraged, picks her up in his arms, and carries her to bed. Ellen, yes, take me, please, please. They begin to have intercourse. She moans loudly. Ellen, yes, kiss me, kiss my heart, let him see our love.
Yeah, it's just like, good lord. Like this feels like I shouldn't be watching it.
Almost made you feel uncomfortable.
A little bit. I did block that scene out of my brain, but yeah,
I'm sorry that I just brought it back up.
Yeah, vivid, but yeah, the writing here, friggin' killer. It is so, like I said, it's very dense. If you are not super familiar with the like old English, it kind of can get hard to follow. Like a lot of the words, like there were a lot of words that were being used that I was just like, okay, I'm just going to use context clues for that. Cause I was Googling like every like 5 minutes that felt at least. I was like, okay, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah. I had to rewind quite a few times just to make sure that I understood that line properly, even with the subtitles on.
Yeah. Subtitles didn't help for shit.
No, they did not.
Yeah. The only thing subtitles helped with was spelling.
Yeah, straight up.
All right, next up we got acting. Going through this cast list, first up we got Lily Rose Depp, who plays Ellen Hutter. Is this Johnny Depp's daughter?
I think so.
Like, Depp is not a super
common name.
Hold on. Yeah. Her parents are Johnny Depp and Vanessa Perry.
Oh, okay.
Which, who is that? A French singer, model, and actress.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Yeah. So we got Lily Rose Depp, who played Ellen Hutter. We got Nicholas Holt, who plays Thomas Hutter. Aaron Taylor Johnson, who plays Friedrich Harding. Emma Corrin, who plays Anna Harding. I did not realize that was her.
I didn't either. Yeah,
like, and we just saw her.
Yeah, just saw her in Deadpool and Wolverine.
We got Bill Skarsgård, who plays Count Orlok. Willem Dafoe, who plays Professor Albin Eberhard von Franz. We got Ralph Ineson, who plays Dr. Wilhelm Sievers. Bro, you know who he reminds me of? Freaking hell, what's his... I keep forgetting his name. Like, I forgot it when I brought this up to Brielle too. He reminds me of the guy who plays Snape.
Oh,
Alan Rickman.
That's, oh my God. How could I forget his name?
Yeah. I felt like, this dude. Yeah. If they want to recast a freaking identical Professor Snape for that Harry Potter series, which I know they're not going to do, he'd be top choice.
Yeah. He's definitely got the
like every time he talked, I was like, bro, like I was legitimately thinking, I'm like, there's no way Alan Rickman is dead. But yeah, like crazy. Then we got Simon McBurney, who plays Nock. For whatever reason, I thought this guy was Gary Oldman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I think it was just in his voice. He just sounds like Gary Oldman.
All right. I can see that. That's fair.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your top three look like?
So number one, I would actually give to Nicholas Holt.
Oh, dude, 100%.
Because, I mean, he's great in everything. Nicholas Holt is one of the best actors working today. But this movie especially just proved his acting chops. Like we brought up earlier with that scene when he first meets Count Orlok, like, you freaking got the same shivers that he did for how incredible his acting was in that scene.
Oh, yeah, dude. You want to talk about an underrated actor, dude? He has been in damn near everything.
Dude, I cannot wait to see his interpretation of Lex Luthor.
Oh,
Superman.
I'm so pumped.
I'm sure he's going to knock it out of the park.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I like, it's crazy his range. Like, because he's done movies like this, horror. He's done superhero action films. He's done like romantic comedies. He's done comedy. Just straight up comedy. He's done voice acting before. There is not a single thing this guy cannot do.
Seriously. For real.
Yeah. I forget what the show is on Hulu that he does the voice for. I'm just looking at his list of movies, and there's not a single one on here. Like, listen, there's a few duds. He was not the problem in those. Crossing Swords, yeah, on Hulu. Like, it took me so long. I kept seeing his name pop up in the credits, and I was like, who in the hell does he voice in Crossing Swords? And he was the main guy. And it was blowing my mind. But yeah, I mean, he's been in X-Men. I guess he was in Garfield. He was in Deadpool 2?
Oh, yeah, he played John in Garfield.
No. Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Good hell, dude. So good.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, like, Mad Max, he was in that. Frickin' Jack the Giant Slayer. He was in another vampire movie, frickin' Renfield. Warm Bodies. I love Warm Bodies.
That is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. All the X-Men movies that he was in. Yeah, there's not a whole hell of a lot that he's in that I was, like, not impressed by him. Like, I'm even thinking back to, like, The Menu. The Menu was really freaking good, too. But, yeah, love him. Love him as an actor.
So
good. So, yeah, he's easily my number one spot, too.
Number two? I'm trying to think. I'm tossed between... you know what? I think just because like her, for what she had to do, like her acting chops were like really, really good. They were up there. So I'll give number two to Lily Rose Depp. I thought for what she had to do in this role, she freaking killed it. And I'm sure, and just the kind of shit that she had to say, the kind of actions, like, wow, like this girl had to work. Like she really had to act, and she did a phenomenal job.
Yeah, she was earning a paycheck.
Yeah, seriously. And then, you know, number three is like a toss up. It's a coin flip. But I think I would give number three to Willem Dafoe. Bill Skarsgård is a close fourth. I mean, he's really good as Count Orlok, especially with that voice. But just the lines that Willem Dafoe had, just the way that he portrayed those lines, and he is one of the greatest actors to ever grace the silver screen. He truly is. And like with Nicholas Holt, if you find him in a bad movie, it is definitely not his fault, because Willem Dafoe will give it his all no matter what role that he is portraying.
Absolutely.
And this movie was no exception. He, even though, you know, he didn't come in till like halfway, he made up for it with how incredible his acting was here. So yeah, I'd give number three to Willem Dafoe, but like I said, it's a close call between him and Bill Skarsgård. Nothing against Bill Skarsgård. I think he did a great job with what he had to do with, like, especially like with that grungy voice. Really, really good job. But just like some of the lines that Willem Dafoe had to deliver, and just, yeah. So that's my top three.
Yeah. I'm actually switching it up just a bit. I'm giving Willem Dafoe my number two, and then I'm giving my number three to Bill Skarsgård. His Count Orlok. Fair. Dude, talk about someone who could just disappear into a role.
Dude, straight up.
Like this, I had the same issue with his Count Orlok that I have with his Pennywise. I'm sitting there trying to look and see if I could see Bill Skarsgård. Guess what? You can't.
No.
Like, he's sitting there. Good. I'm like, oh my lord, dude. Like, I'm trying to see. I'm like, where it is, like, the Bill Skarsgård. Like, you maybe get like a glimpse of him in like in the eyes, just a hair, but he's still like just distorted enough where it's just it's super hard to tell.
Yeah,
like who he like where he's come like where he is in this character, and I'm like, God, like so good. Like, so freaking good.
Speaking of Bill Skarsgård, just really quickly, did you catch the teaser trailer for the Welcome to Derry series?
No.
Oh, dude, yeah, it just dropped today. You should watch it later tonight.
Hell
or tomorrow. Yeah. Dude, it looks so good. You only see, like, one shot of Pennywise at the end, but, like, what leads up to it, like, yeah, this series looks really freaking good. I'm stoked.
Oh, I'm pumped. I'm so pumped. Yeah. But yeah, so he's going to be my number three, just for all the reasons that we already stated. And then, like I say, close four is Lily Rose Depp. Like, sure. I felt like she was a little sidelined.
That's fair.
Like, for someone that has been on like the main posters and everything, this was like straight up, this was Nicholas Holt's movie.
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. Even though she's the one that's getting taken over by the demon.
Yeah. But I mean, everything that she did was perfect. It's just she just got outshined a little bit.
Yeah. No, I feel also another one that was the whole cast is really, really good. But I feel this guy just doesn't get enough love for how incredible of an actor he is. Aaron Taylor Johnson, he was fantastic in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Wow.
Yeah, freaking loved him. Until he went all freaking psycho at the end. But listen, understandable. Like,
yeah.
Like, if you're going to lose your sanity, like, I get it.
Yeah. Might as well go out with your wife.
Like, yeah. After seeing what you saw, like, I'll give you a pass.
Yeah. Fair. Yeah. This guy went through so much loss in one movie. It's so tragic.
Yeah. Crazy. Where are you sitting with your acting score?
I don't know if I'm in the 90s. Or you know what, actually, just because I feel like the acting from like everybody was just like really, really solid. So, you know, I'm just going to be at a straight up 90.
Yeah. I'm actually just 1 point higher. I'm at a 91.
Hell yeah.
All right. Next up, we got character development. The movie's going to take a bit of a dive here.
Yeah, because yeah. Oh my God. Like you said, it's so dense that it's very hard to remember these names. Ellen. The direction that her character goes, like, you know, I get it. You know, she sacrificed herself to truly destroy Count Orlok, Nosferatu. But I don't know, just the way that her character started and then it just declined. And then the way it ended, you're like, okay, all right. That was something.
It's just her sacrifice at the end was just odd.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it felt like an odd choice just because of how hard she was pushing to stay with Thomas. And then it's just like, boom, yeah. She like shifts and it's instant like sacrifice. Like it didn't really like. I think we needed to see her struggle with that decision a bit more.
Yeah,
or she would really at all.
Yeah, like literally if she was like fighting with Willem Dafoe's character and like him like having to explain to her over and over again, like you're literally the only one that can stop this. You're the only one that can truly destroy Nosferatu. But like it takes so long for her to come around. Like, yeah, that would have made more sense. And I would have been more forgiving with the character development. But like they discover like, oh, you know, she's the only one. She's like, okay, yeah, no, I understand. Okay, I'll do it. It's like, you were fighting for your husband's life last scene, and now you're just willing to accept, like, oh, okay, yeah, I gotta die.
Yeah, it was a little bit below average, like, yeah. Overall, like, my average is usually like 75. I don't think it's quite in the 60s yet, so I'm sitting at like a pretty sturdy 70.
I think I'll just be like just a couple above you at 72.
Fair. Moving on over to effects, really freaking good.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, these were fantastic.
They were so good. Dude, there were so many scenes here that were like just so visually impressive.
Yeah. Like, honestly, I thought maybe it's just because I had only seen. Okay, maybe it's just me. Did they show the trailer for this movie in black and white, or am I just losing my mind?
They might have.
Because I thought they did. Because, yeah, when this movie like actually like started in color, I'm just like, oh, shit, I thought this movie was going to be in black and white. I wasn't going to be opposed to that. Like, I love that. It would have made sense. But that just like kind of like took me back. I'm like, oh, shit, it's in color.
Okay, I don't feel like it's totally fair to have a movie that's this, we're going to keep saying this word, that it's this dense in dialogue and also have it in black and white. I think you get one or the other.
You know what? Fair enough.
Especially with what's supposed to be like a blockbuster film.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's fair.
Like, everybody gets one. You either get the black and white, or you get the super heavy dialogue. You don't get both.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Dude, one of my favorite scenes was when Thomas was walking towards the castle, and he walked into that like super dark forest, and the carriage started coming at him, and how he was standing in the middle of that crossroad. And it was just like the snow just coming through the center of that, like, of that super heavy, dense forest. I'm like, this is amazing to look at.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, that was a great shot. Even when, the night after he stays at the hotel, when he just walks out of the room and there's like nobody there, it's just like a ghost town, but it's just like covered in snow. Loved that shot.
Oh, so good. Dude, I've always wondered, like, how they've filmed shots like that are so far away, like how much of that is like digitally added.
Yeah.
And then I hear scenes like, okay. So Tom Welling, who did, Smallville, there's a scene where he's in, like, he's supposed to be in like where the Fortress of Solitude is. And so he's in the middle, on the middle of like a mountain, just surrounded by snow. And what they ended up doing with that shot is they flew him out into the middle of nowhere, just like on a mountain full of snow, and then lowered him by helicopter onto the ground, because he was supposed to have flown there. And so he's like, yeah, so we're just going to drop you dead center in the middle of this mountain. We're going to get to like this position, and then you just kind of like look around or do whatever. It's just, they're just like, it's just super important. You do not move. But yeah, I'm like, that's freaking commitment. So I'm like,
yeah,
dude, is that seriously something that they did here? Like, they just built this big ass freaking house, I guess, and then just covered it in snow, and like, because it looked like untouched. Like,
it did.
Yeah, it looked like freshly laid snow, but it was, yeah, visually amazing. Like, so freaking good, dude.
Yeah.
I can't 100%. Think of a single special effect that I wasn't impressed by.
No, me neither.
Like, everything with Orlok looked good. If I'm being real nitpicky, maybe the wolves?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, like, I'm still well within the 90s. Like, I'm probably sitting at like a 92.
Damn, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got music, which I guess we can tie in other audio features with that, because there weren't very many like songs.
No. I'll admit, there were some parts where like the music would like bang in loudly and it scared the shit out of me, and I I freaking jumped.
Dude, the cheap jump scares.
At the beginning.
The cheap ass freaking jump scares. Like, made me want to freaking punch a wall.
Fair. Definitely fair.
Yeah. Soundtrack wise, I'm probably sitting at like a 5, but
I was thinking
taking into consider, like, actually, I still might be at a 5. I can't justify going up higher for the sound effects.
No, yeah, dude, I couldn't either. Like, the sound effects, like, add a lot to it. And, like, you know, like, they definitely make, you know, like, you feel, like, uneasy during certain scenes. But, like, yeah, it definitely doesn't detract or, like, add to the fact that the soundtrack is definitely nothing to write home about. It's very mediocre.
Yeah. Like, everything fit well with the scenes. Yeah. Like, there wasn't anything that was just, like, god awful, but there wasn't anything that was like outstanding and grand about it either.
Like, I know not every soundtrack, you know, like, actually has to have, you know, like, music that, like, you know, like, has lyrics, you know, stuff like that, but, like, it's no, like, like, if I'm thinking of, like, you know, like, scary or horror movies that, like, the music, like, literally, if it weren't for the music, like, the movie wouldn't be as scary as it is. Instantly think of Halloween, the original Halloween. If it weren't for John Carpenter's score, the original Halloween would not be as scary and tense as it is.
Yeah.
And so, like, if I'm comparing it to that, like, cause I would put Halloween soundtrack at either like a 9 or a 10. So, like, for how much I feel Nosferatu doesn't even come close to that, I feel that 5 is justified.
Yeah. I feel like you could have had a really bitchin' score with this too.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but it's just focus, like, whatever they focused on, and obviously this time they didn't focus on the soundtrack.
Yeah,
which makes sense. Like, especially with a movie like this, like, it makes sense.
Definitely.
Moving on over to costumes.
So, if you guys wanted to know, if you've seen this movie, there is a shot where Nicholas Holt's character, Thomas, opens up Count Orlok's coffin, and Count Orlok rises up, and you see him in all of his full nudity, junk and all. You straight up see Count Orlok's dick. And that was a prosthetic dick, of course. And Nicholas Holt, I think he took it home. Or maybe he was just like holding it in his Instagram picture. I don't know. But Nicholas Holt, he did have a frame, so he probably did take it home. But Nicholas Holt posted on Instagram him holding the framed prosthetic of Count Orlok's dick.
That is hilarious.
And he's freaking smiling doing it. It's amazing. It's fantastic.
Bro, freaking Orlok's design, though, so good.
Oh yeah, dude, so creepy. Especially, like, dude, freaking when Thomas first comes to his castle, and literally all we're seeing is him in the shadows, like, we don't see him in his entirety yet. One of my favorite parts of this movie, like, they did such a good job building up his appearance in this.
Oh yeah, like, oh, so good. Like, everything about it worked. Like, the voice and how he looked, it matched perfectly.
It did.
And honestly, like, everyone else's outfits, I was super impressed with.
Yeah, no, they did a great job staying true to the time period.
Yeah, I would honestly be, I'm at, like, probably an 8.5. So I could go either which way.
I would say a 9, honestly.
Yeah. I'm with you. I was gonna go with a 9 and let you be the asshole if you were gonna go with an 8.
Well, joke's on you.
No, but the costume department knocked it out of the park. Everyone looked so good, so freaking, like, with the times. And then Orlok, dude, freaking the thing of nightmares,
straight up.
Yeah, but I'm like, it's just. His silhouette, I don't think, is quite on the same level as, like, other silhouettes I've seen. Like, he has a great silhouette, don't get me wrong,
Yeah.
But I don't think like the rest of the outfits quite shine enough to justify a 10.
That's fair.
But I do feel like Orlok is a majority of this 9.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. All right. Last up, personal score.
I want to hear yours first, if that's okay.
Oh, boy. I was not the target demographic for this movie. Like, this is a very particular type of person that's going to go in and enjoy this. Like, if you enjoy classic, like the romanticism behind like old timey like vampires, this might be the one for you. I don't totally vibe with that shit. Like it, like I said, I'm not the target demographic for this. Even my wife, who is very into vampire, like she very much enjoys like Twilight. She's watched Vampire Diaries. So, like she's kind of in that realm. She didn't even really enjoy this because she felt it was like too old timey, like too like classic vampire. And she doesn't really care for that aspect of it. So like I said, you have to be in a very particular area, like a very specific niche. And I just wasn't quite there. The movie itself was good. The acting was phenomenal. Watching this as I came into this and like viewed it very much as a critic instead of someone that just kind of went in to enjoy a movie, because I kind of had a feeling I wasn't going to, and I wasn't completely wrong. I'd say a good 90% of my enjoyment of this film came from the appreciation of the production. So I think with this movie, I'm probably sitting at like a 77. It was, okay. I know like it seems low, but
no, I get it.
Just personal enjoyment. Like, yeah, 77, not one I'm probably ever going to watch again.
Not completely fair. Yeah. For the most part, I'm going to piggyback on what Caleb said. Yeah, I had no idea. I'm usually not into like old vampire kind of movies. Like, I've never seen the original Dracula. I've never seen Twilight, actually. I'm really not that much into vampires, honestly. It's not my thing. I'm glad that I finally know the story of Nosferatu. It's very interesting that we were first introduced to this character in SpongeBob, and look where we are now. This is we got to see who this character is. I'm glad that I watched it. I'm glad that I can finally say that I've seen this story. I will agree with Caleb. I was definitely more of a I think I was more so maybe like split down the middle. I was definitely a critic a little more, but I was also enjoying it for like the kind of vampire piece that it is, a very old timey vampire piece. For the most part, I did have a good time. And I will say kind of going off, like, this doesn't have anything to do with the actual movie, but like, I remember when they announced the steelbook for this movie, and I saw it, and I was like, well, you know what, I haven't seen it yet, so like, maybe let's not pre-order it. And then it sold out, and now I think it like goes for like 50 to 80 bucks instead of 30 bucks. So like,
holy,
I
kick myself. Shit.
Yeah, so I kick myself for missing out on the steelbook for this movie, because like, it's pretty cool, but I'm glad that I've seen it now, because I know that I would not spend 50 or more dollars on this movie. Like, 20 for a steelbook, 20 to 30, yeah, I think I would, especially for how I really thought the steelbook was cool. But anyway, getting past that. Overall, I had a decent time with this movie. I think I would watch it again, just to maybe see if like there's stuff that I just didn't catch in my first viewing. But I completely understand why Caleb would want to come back to this movie. I completely get it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. Vampires were never really my vibe.
It's weird. Like,
you know, like, a lot of people growing up and nowadays, like when they think like classic horror characters, you know, they always think the Mummy, Frankenstein, Dracula. That was, since I was a kid, that was never mine. No, my classic horror characters are freaking Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, Jason Voorhees, Chucky. Those are my horror classic characters. Those are my monsters.
Who was your, like, out of the classic Halloween monsters, like, who was your, like, favorite?
I'd probably say the Mummy.
The Mummy?
Yeah.
I was more of a Frankenstein. It was either,
that's fair. It was either the Mummy or the Invisible Man. It's kind of,
ooh,
it's kind of
Invisible
a toss-up
Man
between
is
those
good.
Two.
No. Yeah, but Frankenstein. I was always more intrigued by Frankenstein. Frankenstein and werewolves. Ooh, like, I think I much prefer werewolves. Like, vampires were always, like, bottom on my list. I'm like, I don't give a shit about you, little prissy pants. Like, I prefer the rough and gruff werewolves or the freaking badass freaking hulking Frankenstein.
No, that's fair. It's unfortunate. I don't know if, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but that movie that came out, The Wolfman, I heard that wasn't that good. And it sucks because it's from the same director that did The Invisible Man.
Oh, that's lame.
I know. I mean, we haven't seen it, so we could be wrong, and maybe we'll like it. But yeah, when I like we're seeing the reviews, I'm like, man, that sucks. Because like The Invisible Man is like one of the best. I don't even think it's a remake. I think it's like a reimagining of a character. So I was very sad to hear that.
Yeah.
But anyway, my score, my personal score for Nosferatu, I'm just going to be a couple points higher than Caleb. I'm going to be at a solid, I'm tossing these two numbers. I'm going to be at a solid 80. Like, okay. I think, you know, it barely makes it, but I do think that there is enough parts that I enjoyed that I can warrant putting it into the B minus territory. So
totally fair. All right, going through these categories real quick, starting off with story, we ended up averaging out to an 83. Writing got a pretty decent bump, sitting at an 88. Acting got another bump, sitting at a 90.5. The character development was average at best. We're sitting at a 71 with that one. The effects are our highest category, sitting at a 92. Our music is at the lowest category, sitting at a 5 out of 10. Costumes is sitting at a 9 out of 10. And then our personal score ended up averaging out to a 78.5. So with that, the final All Bros letter grade for Nosferatu has come out to a B-.
Okay, that's not bad. I like that.
Oh, I think we lost Rose's image or picture.
Oh, shit. God,
that's what you get for hitting your desk too hard.
Son of a bitch. God damn it. Strump. No, that didn't do anything.
Looking at it, it's actually a pretty strong B-.
Okay.
So our cutoff for a B is 83%. This is sitting at an 82.87%.
I'll take it.
Yeah. So let's see. So this is sitting below The Greatest Showman. And then getting into the B range, it's sitting below Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle, Violent Night, Argyle, and Wish.
Okay. That's not bad.
Yeah. And then going the opposite direction, it's sitting above Gran Turismo.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Scream 6.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right. A Haunting in Venice.
Okay.
The Hunt.
All right.
And Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire.
Okay. For the most part, I can agree with that.
Yeah. I don't think it's not bad. Not bad placement.
No, it's not.
Definitely a lot higher than I thought it was going to get, though.
Yeah, dude, same here.
Yeah, I thought this was gonna be like a lower B minus, maybe be in the C plus range, but
Hell yeah. All right. Well, if you enjoyed this and you want to check out more episodes, you can follow and subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. We are damn near everywhere. Google Play, Spotify, all those places. If you want to check out our social media, you can find us at X. Twitter is X, Jonathan. Wow. Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, just search at the All Bros and you should be able to find us on all of those. If you want to email us, you can do so. theallbroschannel@gmail.com. If you want to check out our website, tinyurl.com/theallbros. And if you want to check out our website, wow, our merch store, you can do so at tpublic.com/user/theallbros. It's just the All Bros, right? Not the All Bros channel.
Yeah, pretty sure.
Okay, I always forget that. If it doesn't work for just, if you type in just the All Bros and it doesn't work, try the All Bros channel and that should work. But anyway, next week, Caleb and I will be breaking down Love Hurts, the new Kyu Hoi Kwan movie that came out, and I'm pretty sure it came out like right around Valentine's Day, that is now on Peacock. So we're definitely excited to check out that one. So if you guys haven't seen that, you know, go check it out on Peacock before we break that down. So you can join us for the fun with that episode. But until then, this has been the All Bros Podcast. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Caleb.
And we will see you guys next week. See ya.
Deuces.